Thank you, Chairperson. But of course would require me to go into some degree of detail. Let us first thank the chairpersons of the respective committees for inviting the National Prosecuting Authority to brief the two committees on progress and challenges regarding the prosecution of state of capture matters. Today's briefing is of course occasioned by aspects which arose during a briefing by the acting head of the Directorate for Priority Crimes Investigations, General Matakata, on 28 February to the Portfolio Committee on Police in response to questions which arose around the state of capture investigations, particularly around the investigations, the subsequent arrests, and appearance before court of accused in the Estina matter. General Matakata inter alia informed this committee that the DPCI concluded their investigation into the Estina matter in November 2017, after which the docket was submitted to the National Prosecuting Authority, with the DPCI having to wait for the NPA to make a decision as to whether or not any person or persons should be prosecuted or not. Further, that the DPCI were only given a go-ahead by the NPA team of prosecutors in February 2018, which resulted in the arrests. That General Matakata did not know why it took so long for the NPA to finalize the charges, that the DPCI expressed its concern that matters were dragging, that General Matakata purportedly took this up with both the former Minister of Police and myself, that the NPA in effect hindered the work of the DPCI in not taking the matter to court expeditiously, that there are cases where the docket has been at the NPA for a year in some instances for the NPA to take a decision. Before responding to these issues raised by General Matakata during that briefing, we deem it necessary and prudent to first provide some general feedback in relation to the state of capture investigations. During our appearance before SCOPA on the 23rd of May 2017, and again during our briefing to the Justice and Correctional Services Portfolio Committee in September and October last year, we inter alia briefed the committee on the following: that the state of capture report was referred to both my office and to the head of the DPCI by the new public protector, that an analysis of the state of capture report warranted a criminal investigation, as the information contained in the report was understandably at the time insufficient to make any pronouncement thereon. That I subsequently consulted with the head of the National Prosecuting Services and with the head of the SECU, and I constituted a team of experienced prosecutors under the leadership of the head of the SECU, Advocate Marlene Govender, to provide the requisite guidance to the DPCI investigators under the auspices of prosecutor-guided investigations. Further, that a team of asset forfeiture specialists were added under the leadership of the head of operations at the asset forfeiture unit, Advocate Knox Molele. That the investigation was subsequently divided into seven legs. The first leg was the Mentor investigation. The second leg was the Jonas investigation. The third leg related to a complaint in respect of the government communications information system and the New Age contract investigations. The fourth leg related to Eskom and Tegeta. The fifth related to Transnet and Trillion. The sixth leg related to the Denal VR laser investigation. And the seventh leg was the Public Protector Act offences against Colin Mahini and the former president, which required a degree of investigation. Of course, numerous engagements had taken place between the NPA prosecutors and the DPCI investigators. Of course, these investigations are still ongoing, and these negotiations and engagements between the two units and structures are still ongoing. I further advised at the time that the Estina matter had become the eighth leg of the investigation, and that there was a team of prosecutors and asset forfeiture unit specialists that were working on this matter as well. We assured the respective committees that work was being done on all these matters, which work is continuing to this very day. We also informed the Justice and Correctional Services Portfolio Committee that we were not in a position at the time to comment on whether or not anyone would be charged, as that was for the decision makers when the investigations were concluded. We further advised the Justice and Correctional Services Portfolio Committee that we could not inform the committee whether there would be any asset confiscations and or preservation applications, and if so, when they will take place, as publicly disclosing this in itself was undesirable and creates challenges ordinarily in ex parte applications and would cause unnecessary time delays. On the 26th of August 2017, I was formally briefed by Advocate Governor, the head of the SCCU, and of course, Knox Molele, the operational head of the Asset Forfeiture Unit, on the strategy to be adopted to deal with the management of the potential flight risks the suspects they had identified presented. Further, the asset forfeiture processes, and of course, importantly, the prosecution strategy. In the space of approximately 7 months, the joint prosecuting and investigating team has inter alia done the following. I beg your pardon. The joint teams engaged in no less than 24 formal meetings. They received 19 dockets or inquiries relating to various allegations. They received 7 forensic or investigative reports commissioned by National Treasury or civil society organizations. They issued 373 Section 205 subpoenas. They drafted and submitted requests for mutual legal assistance to 8 countries and directly engaged with prosecuting authorities in 7 of these countries. The work of the team must be viewed against the fact that cases of this nature are extremely complex and, like the arms deal prosecutions, may take several years to investigate and to prosecute on a running court roll. The asset forfeiture conducted preliminary assessments of the various reported matters and incidences. They identified 17 cases with asset forfeiture potential to the collective value of 50 billion rand. Of course, these are to be dealt with in terms of Chapter 5 and Chapter 6 of the Prevention of Organized Crime Act. To date, the Asset Forfeiture Unit has obtained 2 preservation orders, an amount of 1.6 billion rand in respect of the McKinsey and Trillion Agreement, and 228 million rand in respect of the Estina matters. Of course, there are a number of other matters that are in the process of being finalized, so we can expect these applications to be brought within weeks. In fact, some of them should have been brought already. I want to speak about the Estina matter. The Estina leg was prioritized and was first referred to the National Prosecuting Authority on the 18th of August last year. In the space of the past 7 months, the NPA team of asset forfeiture unit specialists and the prosecutors were able to ensure that the investigations by the DPCI were fast-tracked so that a preservation application could be brought, that search and seizure operations could be embarked upon, and arrests of some of the accused could be effected. The investigations are far advanced, with search and seizures having been conducted and arrests having been effected against 3 government officials, the director of Estina, and 3 directors of companies that received the proceeds of crime. The latter companies and directors were charged with offences of theft, money laundering, and contraventions of the Companies Act. There, however, remain a few outstanding aspects. It is for this reason that the matter has been postponed to the 17th of August 2018 for further investigations. I want to deal with the responses to the issues raised by the acting head of the DPCI. After General Matakata's appearance before the Portfolio Committee on Police last week, I requested a comprehensive report and briefing from Advocate Govender on the Estina matter and on the remarks made by General Matakata to the Portfolio Committee on Police, insofar as it relates to the NPA. On Monday, 5 February, I was provided with a report on a factual account on the NPA's engagement with the DPCI based on inter alia notes kept by the head of the SCCU in her office file, reports received, email correspondence, entries in the investigation diary of the police docket, and briefings by the prosecuting and investigating teams. I do not intend to traverse all the engagements and interactions between the NPA and the DPCI in relation to all state of capture investigations and the Estina matter, but only that which I deem is relevant for today's briefing. Now, General Matakata and I have always enjoyed a very collegial and professional working relationship from the commencement of her stint as head of the DPCI. Of course, we would telephonically communicate with each other at any time convenient to the both of us, and we would meet regularly on various issues impacting on our respective institutional, legal and constitutional responsibilities, even after hours and on weekends, a relationship that we still share and which I have no doubt will continue going forward. It is regrettable that General Matakata made some of the utterances to the Portfolio Committee on Police insofar as it relates to the NPA, as I believe and have been advised that she had been incorrectly informed and or advised. I also believe that the issues raised by General Matakata could easily have been resolved outside of the public fora directly between the two of us. This misinformation has incorrectly given the perception that the NPA and the DPCI and or the prosecuting team and the investigating team and or General Matakata and I are at loggerheads. This, I assure you, is entirely incorrect. We nevertheless dispute to the fullest the utterances made by General Matakata to the Portfolio Committee on Police on 28 February 2018, specifically insofar as it relates to the NPA. During the evening of 22 May 2017, General Matakata and I, whilst participating in another engagement, took the opportunity to also discuss the state of capture investigations. In this regard, we discussed consolidating all the matters under one investigating team. At the time, I had already constituted a prosecuting team. And of course, that all the state of capture related investigations be subsequently submitted to the prosecuting team to provide the requisite guidance under the prosecutor guided investigations methodology. This was agreed upon. At the time, some of the matters were being investigated by the DPCI's serious economic offences. I pause to state, I think that is what they are titled, and some by the anti-corruption task team. By July 2017, all the matters had not been forwarded to the NPA as yet. Advocate Nzinyati, who is present today, the Deputy National Director of Public Prosecutions and Head of the National Prosecuting Services, to whom the head of the SCCU reports, wrote to General Matakata on 7 July, requesting the General's assistance in facilitating the referral of all matters relating to the state of capture allegations to the NPA. On the 2nd of August, Advocate Governor called a General Mononopi of the DPCI to inquire about the docket in the Estina matter. This was followed up by a meeting dated 3 August 2017. On the 8th of August, a meeting was held with two members of the DPCI investigation team and the NPA's head of the SCCU and the head of operations of the asset forfeiture unit, where assistance was rendered in the signing of subpoenas in terms of Section 205 of the Criminal Procedure Act. On the 18th of August, the self-same members of the DPCI provided the docket to the NPA in respect of the Estina matter and two other related matters. At that stage, The A-clip of the docket, which ordinarily contains police witness statements and evidence, only went up to A5. On the 21st of August 2017, the NPA obtained National Treasury's reports in respect of the Estina matter and another matter, which I don't need deem necessary to mention to this committee today, which reports were provided to both the investigating team and the prosecuting teams. On the 25th of August, the DPCI investigating team met with the NPA prosecuting and asset forfeiture teams. At that stage already, Advocate Govender alerted the joint teams of ensuring that their activities canvassed the flight risks that potential suspects presented. Advocate Governor further requested the joint team to fast-track the investigation and for a draft charge sheet to be available by November 2017. The team, however, expressed grave reservations about this being achievable in the light of the nature and the complexity of the investigation and the case. On Saturday, 26 August, I was briefed by the prosecuting and asset forfeiture unit teams on their strategies to preserve assets and to have matters enrolled expeditiously and to manage any potential flight risks. I was deeply concerned about the progress of the investigation into this matter and a number of other investigations, and had previously made specific recommendations to General Matakata during one of our many one-on-one engagements. I thus deemed it prudent to write to General Matakata on 1 September 2017, in which communication I inter alia conveyed the following: that I was deeply concerned about the lack of significant progress with investigations in respect of some very topical, high-profile, serious alleged corruption, fraud, and financial mismanagement matters, some of which had previously been discussed between the two of us. I implored on General Matakata to assign additional resources and investigators to these matters. I advised that I was of the respectful view, with which General Matakata was in agreement, that serious consideration be given to invoking the provisions of Section 17, capital D, subsection 3 of the South African Police Service Act in some of these matters, by requesting me to appoint a director of public prosecutions or a special director as an investigating director to fast-track some of these investigations. Further, that in the event this is done, I will provide a favourable response thereto. I further alluded General Matakata to the provisions of Section 17, capital J, subsection 1A, of the South African Police Service Act, which provides for the establishment of an operational committee to be comprised of inter alia the head of the DPCI as chairperson, the head of the Crime Intelligence Unit of the police, the National Director of Public Prosecutions, the Directors General of Finance, Justice and Constitutional Development, State Security, Home Affairs, the head of the Financial Intelligence Center, and any other person the operational committee may require as determined by that committee. Subsection 2A of the SAPS Act obligates the operational committee to review, monitor, and facilitate the support and assistance by respective government departments and institutions to the DPCI, including the secondment of personnel to the DPCI, and to address problems that arise in respect of the rendering of such support and assistance to the DPCI. I apologize. Further, that since the DPCI is dedicated to prevent, investigate, and combat national priority offenses, in particular serious organized and transnational crime, serious commercial crime and corruption, it requires the close cooperation of key stakeholders in the justice, crime prevention, and security cluster. That notwithstanding the fact that the DPCI came into operation many years ago, the envisaged operational committee is yet to be established, and that I was confident that the establishment of the operational committee soonest would significantly impact positively on our collective endeavours and efforts to combat the scourge of the various serious crime typologies that have impacted negatively on our economy, the safety and security of our citizens, and the safety and security of our borders. I'd raised this concern with General Matakata by way of illustration, in that my concern was particularly highlighted at the time by the challenges we faced in combating money laundering, illicit financial flows, and terror financing, by the non-establishment of a counter-money laundering advisory council, which was a statutory requirement in terms of the Financial Intelligence Center Act when it came into operation on 1 February 2002. The council to be constituted by many of the same persons who would constitute the DPCI Operational Committee was obligated to advise the Minister of Finance on policies and best practices in identifying the proceeds of unlawful activities and in combating money laundering. It was further obligated to advise the Minister of Finance on the powers entrusted to the Minister in terms of that Act, and to advise the Financial Intelligence Centre on the performance of its functions. Despite the significant importance of having to establish this council, various Ministers of Finance at the time did not deem it necessary to give effect to the statutory requirements. I further advised that these decisions had adverse consequences in the Republic's ability to combat money laundering, terror financing, and illicit financial flows, and that the FIC Act was amended earlier in 2017, with one of the most notable changes affected being the abolishment of the entire chapter providing for the Counter-Money Laundering Advisory Council. I hence cautioned against a similar position than that which abolished the Counter-Money Laundering Advisory Council. The Asset Forfeiture Unit and the SCCU teams were from the end of September bolstered by the appointment of 7 additional investigators from the DPCI, the police's financial investigations, FAFI, were also allocated 3 additional members. The core team of the investigators remained responsible, but now reported to Colonel Heap, who was assigned as the lead investigators on all these matters. The joint DPCI and NPA teams met again on 13, 27 and 29 September 2017, 16 and 31 October 2017, 8 and 21 November, and again on 7 December before breaking for the festive season. The next meeting was on 18 January 2018. It must be noted that the issues related to bail and the identification of suspects is recorded in the case investigation plans of September 2017. On 25 October, the prosecuting team was provided with a copy of the A-clip of the docket. At that stage, the statements and evidence filed in the docket had progressed to A35. The prosecuting team, however, noted that the scanned copy of the docket provided was incomplete and requested the investigators to be provided with a docket to physically go through the docket and compare what they had received via scanning. This was, however, only provided to the prosecuting team on 14 November 2017. On 8 November, the head of the SCCU was provided with a memorandum and a draft affidavit by Brigadier Basi of the DPCI and Colonel Heap for submission to General Matakata for the NPA's input. Brigadier Basi intimated that if the NPA was in agreement, then warrants of arrests would be issued for the identified suspects. In this regard, Advocate Governor advised Brigadier Basi on how the affidavit should be structured, as the draft omitted canvassing the charges of money laundering and the linkages to clearly establish the prima facie case, which was prerequisite at the time, along with the flight risk information. Advocate Governor further recommended that General Matakata and I be briefed in connection with the arrest of suspects of foreign descent identified as potential flight risks. On 14 November, Brigadier Basi advised Advocate Governor that General Matakata had informed Scopa that the investigation into the Estina matter had been finalized and the docket had been submitted to the NPA for decision. Brigadier Basi, an advocate governor, agreed at the time that the matter was not fully investigated. The prosecuting team further advised that it was not possible for the Estina docket to be submitted for decision as there were substantial investigations that were still outstanding. A case investigation plan dated 8 November detailing the investigations outstanding was provided to Advocate Governor. The prosecuting team further advised that fast-tracking of the financial investigations was material to proving the theft and money laundering charges against the suspects of foreign descent, in respect of whom there were concerns of being a flight risk, so as to establish the prima facie evidence required. In December 2017, the prosecuting team received a draft financial report from the DPCI. The team raised concerns that the report could not be verified against the bank statements in assisting them that a prima facie case had been made out, as it was not a product which could be relied on or presented in court. On 6 December, Advocate Governor met with Brigadier Bukaba and Colonel Heap, where she identified several material deficiencies which the prosecutors correctly observed would preclude same from being used at court. It further presented a challenge in that it did not provide the basis in the memorandum submitted by Brigadier Basi in respect of four suspects of foreign nationality. Brigadier Bukaba undertook to address the shortcomings and to ensure that these were rectified as soon as possible in the new year, as the designated DPCI member had already taken leave for the festive season. On 7 December, during a meeting with the prosecuting team and the DPCI investigators, the prosecuting team advised that they were of the view that a prima facie case could not be made out against the parties identified for the purposes of the theft and money laundering charges from the available evidence, especially without the case flow analysis. Accordingly, no warrants of arrests or affidavits had been prepared by the DPCI investigating team to be submitted to the prosecutors for consideration. This was accepted by all the parties as it was both rational and reasonable. Advocate Governor once again raised the issue of flight risks, to which she and the DPCI investigators advised that monitoring of the suspects' movements were in place. It was jointly decided by both the prosecutors and investigators that the arrests would be targeted for early in 2018 in light of the fact that all the members were also on leave over that period. The prosecuting team was satisfied that the DPCI had put adequate measures in place to manage the flight risks suspects had presented. An updated case investigation plan, which once again highlighted that the DPCI investigators should work on the bail information, was provided to the DPCI investigators. This was required for the arrests of suspects and for their first appearances. The witness statements and evidence filed in the police docket now went up to A82. On 6 December, I was briefed on the matter, during which briefing I also raised the issue of arrests. I was advised that the prosecutors were not in a position to apply for warrants of arrest against the persons of foreign descent. On 11 December, the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services was briefed on the state of capture investigations. On 15 January, Advocate Governor requested Colonel Heap to provide feedback on the warrants of arrest and affidavits. On the 18th of January, during a case status meeting, the prosecutors were presented with an affidavit and applications for warrants of arrest for the very first time. The prosecuting team once again expressed their discomfort in certifying there was a prima facie case establishing the money laundering and theft charges. Brigadier Bukaba was requested to appoint another senior member to assist so as to fast-track the financial analysis within 2 weeks, as the prosecutors did not want this to impact on the charging of any of the suspects. The prosecutors further advised that the arrest affidavit was deficient, as it did not deal with the flight risks, and they had requested the investigators to address this important issue. Only on 23 January were the prosecutors provided with a copy of the affidavit to be used in the search and seizure operations. On the evening of 24 January, Brigadier Basi, Colonel Heap, and Advocate Govender briefed General Matakata and myself and Advocate Nzanyati on the search and seizure operations. At no stage during this meeting did General Matakata raise any of the concerns she had raised with the Portfolio Committee on Police a week ago. We were advised the search and seizure operations would not be accompanied by simultaneous arrests, and that any arrests would be effected soon after the search and seizure operations and after the seized evidence had been evaluated. We were further advised that the reasons advanced for the arrests not being effected simultaneously was as a result of the bail information that was still outstanding, along with the financial analysis which was targeted to be completed within the time frame that had been provided, along with additional statements. This meeting was ideal for General Matakata to raise her concerns about the delays that she had uttered to the Portfolio Committee a week ago. It was not raised with me. On 25 January 2018, the search warrants were authorized by the magistrate in Bloemfontein and executed the very next day. On 27 January, the investigators obtained statements of beneficiaries, which was investigations that had been identified as being outstanding as far back as September 2017. On 31 January 2018, one of the prosecutors pinned the nature of the amendments required for the affidavit for the application for the warrants of arrest, which was provided to the DPCI the same day. On 6 February 2018, the prosecutors met with the investigators and the financial analyst. The prosecutors, supported by one of the financial analysts, expressed reservations about signing off on the warrants without the financial investigations having been finalized. Advocate Govender obtained a copy of the docket during the evening of 7 February and perused same. It is only thereafter that members of the DPCI were advised that they could effect arrests at any stage where it is clear that a person is a flight risk. There was still a substantial amount of information required to be included in the affidavit. Advocate Governor provided guidance to Brigadier Basi thereon and requested the affidavits to be submitted to her by the Friday so that she may attend to the first appearances of the arrested suspects and accused by the Monday, 12 February. The affidavits were forwarded to Advocate Governor on 11 February 2018. Advocate Governor in turn provided an input via email on 12 February 2018 in which she recorded her concerns about the impact on the case as it relates to potential extraditions, and a joint decision was taken to focus on those suspects that the police had traced as being within the borders of the Republic. Brigadier Basi at that stage telephonically advised that some of the suspects had already left the country on or about 12 August 2018. That is approximately a week before the docket had been submitted to the National Prosecuting Authority. On 13 February, members of the prosecuting team met with the investigators and signed off on the warrants of arrest. Advocate Governor suggested that General Matakata and I be briefed on the arrests, but was advised that General Matakata had already been briefed, after which she subsequently briefed me. The arrests were effected the very next day on 14 February 2018 on the persons whom the investigating officers had established were still in the Republic. Brigadier Basi advised that Mr. A.J. Gupta was noted as being in the country when the warrant for his arrest was authorized, and that unfortunately Mr. A.J. Gupta could not be arrested as he purportedly fled while the arrests of others were effected at the Gupta residence in Saxon World. All those arrested appeared in court and were granted bail. The matter has now been postponed to 17 August 2018 for the finalization of the investigation. To answer your questions, was the investigation into the Estina matter concluded in November 2017? In other words, was a fully investigated docket submitted to the National Prosecuting Authority in November 2017? The answer is an emphatic no. That much is evidence from the facts which are presented today. Was the DPCI only given the go-ahead by the NPA team of prosecutors in February 2018, which resulted in the arrests? That is correct. The investigations were at a stage where a prima facie case had been made out against the individuals who were arrested and against those whom warrants of arrest were obtained. Did the DPCI express its concerns that matters were dragging? General Matakata did not raise this with me. In any event, it is clear that the NPA prosecutors did not drag their feet in this matter. Ordinarily, matters of this nature take an extremely long time to investigate, and sometimes even years to prosecute. The docket was only presented to the NPA in August 2017. In less than seven months, the accused were brought before court. Did General Matakata take this up with both the former Minister of Police and I? I dispute that General Matakata took this up with me. In fact, I was completely surprised by the comments to the Portfolio Committee on the issues that we have addressed today and were addressed a week ago. Did the NPA hinder the work of the DPCI in not taking the matter to court expeditiously? We dispute this in the strongest sense, that the NPA hindered the work of the DPCI in not taking the matter to court expeditiously. Decisions were taken jointly by the NPA prosecuting team and the DPCI investigating team. If the matter was not ripe for enrollment, surely the fault cannot be placed at the door of the National Prosecuting Authority. In other words, if the NPA is not satisfied that there is a prima facie case to enroll the matter, how can it be expected of the prosecutors to do so? Notwithstanding this, nothing precluded nor precludes the DPCI from arresting any suspect in any matter with or without a warrant. This they are aware of. Notwithstanding this, in such a situation, if the prosecution is not satisfied that a prima facie case has been made out, the matter would be removed from the court roll and a suspect and or accused would be released from custody. Are there cases, in some instances, where dockets have been at the NPA for a year for the NPA to take a decision? These have not been brought to my attention. I'm unaware of these, and I invite General Matakata to provide Advocate Mzinyati and I with a list of these cases to enable us to investigate these delays and to take the requisite action. My concluding remarks. It's regrettable that these issues found its way into the public fora prior to being addressed by General Matakata and I. The matter could have and should have been handled differently. We regard the DPCI as one of our critical partners in the fight against serious national and transnational crimes, financial crimes, maladministration, money laundering, corruption, and organized crime, in all its forms and manifestations. We look forward to continue working closely with the DPCI and building on the already entrenched professional relationship, goodwill, and generally good relations between the two institutions, and in giving effect to the provisions of Section 41, Subsection 1H of the Constitution. We'd like to thank the Joint Committees for inviting the National Prosecuting Authority to provide clarity on the issues which arose during the briefing by the DPCI to the Portfolio Committee on Police a week ago. Thank you.